We have two segments today. First, because of the recent outbreaks of tornadoes across Oklahoma, Kansas, up through the Midwest, Michigan, Ohio, and on Wednesday across North Alabama and Southern Tennessee, we're going to briefly review our tornado safety plan. And then second, we're seeing a lot of questions and discussion on long-term water storage, especially what type of container to use. Most of us don't have enough water stored for a long-term event, and we may not know the best storage methods, so we're going to discuss water storage containers on today's episode.
Welcome to Practical Prepping. Today is May the 9th, 2024. And this is episode 466. This is the Prepping Podcast with no bunkers, no zombies, and no alien invasions. Just practical prepping, where we believe that stuff happens, so we need to stay prepared. And we're here to help you get prepared. I am Krista.
And I'm Mark. And if you'd like the expanded notes for this episode, go to practicalprepping.info/466. In the second segment, we're going to be talking about long-term water storage, and we've put several options in the episode notes with links so that you can see them if you're looking for safe water storage containers. And we've also put them in the featured items section from the website, practicalprepping.info. Let's get into segment number one.
This is current events, the tornado safety plan. You know, even as we speak, we have been hearing about and discussing active tornadoes raging across our nation. And, you know, it almost seems like no state is unscathed at this point.
Yeah, we're actually recording on Wednesday evening, and we may have another tornado alarm go off on our weather radio.
Yeah, we've already had one before we started recording.
Yeah, just before we started, we had another one. And that's moving into our county, and we have seven around us.
Right. So we're watching it.
On that tornado safety plan, we want to have at least two ways of receiving warnings.
Or more, absolutely.
At least
two ways.
You don't want to depend on the outdoor sirens.
Yes, they can actually fail you if there already is a big thunderstorm raging. Mm-hmm. If the winds, the straight line winds are raging, you may not actually hear that outdoor siren from the inside of your house.
Exactly. So if you don't live right next to it, don't depend on it. And if you do live right next to it, have more ways because they can go down. I see that quite regularly where a siren has gone down in a particular area. Second thing, respect the polygon. And we get that from James Spann in Birmingham, Alabama.
We love our James.
James Spann, the weatherman. And he says, respect the polygon.
Right.
If you're inside the polygon, take action. Now, our personal procedure is when it goes off, we immediately go to GR level 3 and we're checking to see exactly what is going on.
Because you're seeing what the National Weather Service is
seeing. I'm seeing what they're seeing. If we're inside the polygon, but it's not an immediate threat to us, we get our safe area cleaned out and our cat carrier placed in it.
Yes, because our safe area happens to be a ground level closet. And of course, we store things in there. But if we know that emergency time is coming, we will literally throw the coats out of the coat closet, pull everything out of the floor, and put the cats in the carrier, and we can huddle in there. And we've done that before.
We have. And it's really not that hard. The ideal place is to be underground for a tornado.
If you can, sure.
And that would include a basement if you have part of the basement underground. If you don't, you want to be, like Krista said, in an interior room in the middle of the house, if possible. You want as many walls between you and the outside as you can possibly have.
No windows.
No windows.
Right.
And that's why we have the closet that we use, because it is off of the little hall there. Any other room has at least one window.
Right.
So this is the most interior that we can get in our house and hopefully be safe with that. But if we're inside that polygon, we need to be ready to get in our safe area at a moment's notice.
Now, some items that you need to have, and this is great advice. We learned this from some friends. Have a helmet for each person in your home. And we're talking about a bike helmet, a football helmet, a motorcycle helmet, some sort of protective headgear that's in a helmet form, because you don't want anything crashing down on your head, even if it's a small rafter or 2x4. It could knock you out or give you concussion, and a helmet at least can buy you some time. So you want one for each person, and if possible, keep them in that safe spot, have that at the ready so that each person can put that helmet on. Something else you want to do is have all of your clothes on, be completely dressed, and have on some very sturdy shoes. Now, here's what you don't want to wear: a bathrobe and a pair of flip-flops.
Right.
You know, because I'm serious. Tornadoes have been known to blow the clothes off of people.
Well, true. But if you wind up walking out of this thing and your house has been totally destroyed,
yeah,
and
exactly,
you've been saved, you really don't want to be walking around in those. One, for those flip-flops, you want some sturdy shoes on because you're likely to be walking in debris.
Oh, yes.
And some of us don't have the legs for bathrobes, okay?
Just have on proper clothes that you would wear out of doors.
Exactly.
And be ready to, because you may have to spring up and go.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want to be searching around for something to put on. Okay.
And a good idea there, if you're one to jump and run and you have the space in there to do it, keep a change of clothes in there that you could put on
in your safe space.
In the safe space.
Gotcha.
A pair of jeans, t-shirt,
sneakers, socks,
whatever.
You know, yeah.
But
jacket.
Be prepared to be walking out in public in whatever you're wearing. That's worst case.
Well, yeah, but there may be a reporting news crew.
Yeah.
That rolls up, and you might be the first face they want to talk to.
Yep.
So be ready. Now, earlier in the episode, Mark mentioned about having at least two ways, and in our opinion, you really want more, to receive information. And so we're going to say that you would probably need to tune into an FM radio, maybe have television coverage. A lot of times in a tornado warning situation, the local news crews will go what they call wall to wall, which means they will interrupt your regular programming and they will be giving you tornado polygon information, sometimes right down to the neighborhood and the street, because those weather guys and gals know the area very well. So that would also be a way to receive information.
I mean, it used to be very easy, but now they are building some, since everything's gone digital.
Yeah.
They're building some that will receive television coverage. So if you can't have television, that's a good thing to have. Or going on to Facebook Live from your local station.
Right.
Being able to see that. Or going to the television station and not physically going to it, but going to their website and clicking on a live stream and watching their broadcast. And in our case, we would take a tablet in there.
Well, I was going to say, your devices may also have weather information so that you can have that. And even if it's not affecting your particular area, it may be an area of concern for you, for family members or loved ones. So definitely think about the different ways you can receive information about a tornado, and particularly once the word warning has been issued, because what that means is a funnel cloud has been sighted and it's imminent. It's not just a possible maybe, it's there. A tornado warning.
Yeah. Or it has been indicated on radar.
On radar. It may not have come to the ground yet.
It may not have come to the ground.
But it's getting there.
But it's there. And the best description, and I think you used this one time before, the difference between a warning and a watch is kind of like making a cake. A watch, you've got all of the ingredients out on the table.
Mm-hmm. Your flour, your eggs, your milk,
everything is there to make a cake with.
Yeah, that's a watch.
That's a watch. Tornado watch, all of the elements are there. Then a warning is the cake is in the oven.
It's already baked.
You've already mixed everything together, and it is in there baking. Tornado warning, it's either been a radar indicated or it has been visually observed, but it's time to take action at that point. Also, you want to have a first aid kit in there.
You should.
You think about the possibility that there could be some injuries, the possibility that you could be trapped in that room and need to treat those injuries before rescuers were able to get to you.
Yeah, and remember, they have to clear out some roads a lot mm-hmm. of times just to be able to get some of the personnel through.
Mm-hmm. And you may need a whistle. If you're in there yelling for help, you're going to lose your voice pretty soon.
Yeah.
If you're in there with a whistle, it doesn't take a lot of energy to be able to blow on that whistle. And that whistle is easily heard by rescuers.
And particularly search dogs. Mm-hmm. They can hear a loud whistle or a shrill whistle from many blocks away because their hearing is so much better. Think about also stocking your safe space with some water and some snacks. You may be in there for a couple of hours or 4 or 10. You don't know. Mm-hmm. You don't know how long you might be in there, and you may need some kind of a way to pass the time and hydrate and have something to eat so that you can just kind of keep going. If possible, another thing would be to have a two-way radio, if that is something that you have and something that you're accustomed to using. That may be a way to communicate with some nearby neighbors or perhaps whoever is close by to you. A two-way radio would work. Now, we've also mentioned back onto the cell phone that a lot of times a text message will get through eventually where a voice call may not.
That is correct.
So if you need to get word out to someone, text as many people as you would think would have an interest in hearing from you, and just keep that text is going to keep trying and trying and trying until it reaches who you're sending it to, mm-hmm. so that does help.
And another thing, if you have small children, you may want to have some things in their toys, things to occupy them with. And I would say do some drills. Get them accustomed to doing this a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
They need to understand what we're doing, and they need to be calm. So have some things in there for them. The goal of this is to live through it, and we can deal with the aftermath later.
Absolutely. We just really want to impress upon all of you to have a tornado plan and be safe and understand what you need to do should it strike your area. And we certainly pray that you'll all be protected. Now let's get to segment two. We're going to talk about safe water storage. You know, it's my favorite thing in the whole world to prep and talk about is water, because it's going to be the most critical and most vital element that you can store.
Well, it's absolutely crucial. We can't live long without it.
That's a proven fact. That is not our opinion.
No. And we need clean, uncontaminated water for drinking and for cooking.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can use water out of the mud hole for flushing the toilet. You can use whatever. But we need clean, uncontaminated water for drinking and cooking.
So there are several types of safe water storage containers for prepping. And the first we're going to talk about are the food-grade plastic containers. Now, if you're looking for this, we're talking about containers made from high-density polyethylene, which is HDPE, or low-density polyethylene, which is LDPE, or polyethylene terephthalate, which is PET. Those materials are less likely to leach harmful chemicals into your water storage.
Yeah, and these containers, they're labeled for a recycling code, usually on the bottom. So if you see a recycling code of 1, 2, 4, or 5, they are generally considered safe for water storage. But you want to have food-grade plastic containers if you're using plastic. You want it to be food-grade plastic.
Right. That means not any old bucket will do.
No.
It needs to be labeled food-grade. And we're going to put some of these in the show notes with some photos and some links if you want to see them or to order some. And you can go to practicalprepping.info/466. And we'll also put them on our featured items page, which is linked off the front page. You know what that is? That's our weather radio.
That did go off. We paused. We looked. We're actually safe. It's north of us. But you just need to be prepared and paying attention. So when it went off, we hit the pause button. We checked everything out, and we are back. Let's talk about some water storage barrels when you're wanting to store a large amount of water at a time.
So typically, those are made from the food-grade HDPE that I mentioned before. And these barrels can hold anywhere from 15 to 55 gallons, even more. So you want to ensure that they have tight sealing lids to prevent contamination. And you always want to store them in a cool, dry location away from direct sunlight.
Yeah, and you want to be sure that you store these where you want to keep them.
Yeah, because the 55-gallon water barrel is heavy.
Yeah, at 8.35 pounds per gallon, you're talking, what, over 400 pounds. So make sure you have it where you want it when you fill it up.
And don't store it in the garage or the attic or, you know,
well,
places
not in
like
the attic. It'll come through. But
yeah, that's true.
I mean, in the garage, basement's best place for it, where you can keep it cool and dry. Now, our garage would not be suitable because it is not temperature controlled.
Exactly.
And it would get too hot in the summertime. And you also want to have wood between the barrel and the concrete.
Right. You never want to set it completely on the floor.
Exactly. It's a great use for pallets. Now, let's talk about water bricks and stackable containers.
Yeah, I actually saw these on Amazon. These are smaller stackable plastic containers, and they generally hold anywhere from 3 to 7 gallons of water. And they have that stackable design, and that is convenient for compact storage. They can fit on a lot of the heavy-duty industrial shelving. Mm-hmm. They're a little bit easier to manhandle, sometimes 25 pounds or less in terms of the weight.
Well, if you're talking about one that's about 4 gallons, you're looking at 32.
Yeah, yeah.
But if the three gallon, you're looking really at 24.
Yeah.
So they're great there. And I'm starting to look at smaller because I don't have the arm strength that I used to have. And I'm starting to look at less than 5 gallon. And I'm looking ahead. I'm planning 10 years down the road. You know, I probably won't be able to handle a 7 gallon jug.
Yes, yeah, that's going to be in excess of 56 pounds, right?
Right.
So let's jump over here to water jugs and bottles. And these are commercially available water jugs, you know, like the kind that you see in the water coolers that's, mm-hmm. you know, upside down on that stand. And those are generally safe for storage. Reusable water bottles made from food grade materials are also suitable for shorter term storage or portability. Now, as a matter of fact, we happen to use some of the heavy-duty plastic distilled water bottles, the really tough grade, and mm-hmm. we rotate them every 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, we refill those. We don't put any additive to it, and at least every couple of years, we'll rotate those. Mm-hmm. And I'm comfortable with that. A lot of folks, a son-in-law included, he's going to rotate his water every year. I'm okay with a couple of years. Especially since when I rotate it, it generally goes to watering plants or something.
It's not necessarily what we're going to consume directly.
Right. But if we had to consume it, we'd run it through the filter anyway.
Sure.
So we'd be good there.
Another item would be the collapsible water containers. A lot of folks like using these when they are hiking or camping because it's completely collapsed when it's empty. And then it only fills up when you put water in it. Mm-hmm. So it's great when you're moving from place to place.
Right. For transporting that water, and you mentioned camping, you go down to the creek, you fill it up and bring it back up to the campsite. And so you don't have to make as many trips. And it would be good to take them to the river if you're sourcing water there and bringing it back to the house, to go there and fill them up and bring them back.
Also, you can use glass jars. I know of people that have empty mason jars, and they got the bright idea, well, they're empty. I might as well store water in them. So they made certain that they were clean, mm-hmm. sanitized, and they would just store water in their mason jars and put them in a safe place where they wouldn't rumble or get broken.
And I read something today, actually, that one lady said there's no need to have empty jars.
Exactly.
Said if you have jars, they're just taking up room. So put water in them.
Sure.
And so you've got more water, and then empty them as you need them for canning. So it sounded like a pretty good idea.
The upside of using glass is there's no chance of anything contaminating, leaching into that water. But now the downside, it would take about 4 quarts per person per day. So
that's 4 jars
yeah.
full. If you're using quart jars.
Exactly.
And you need lots of storage for that.
Right. And remember, they are breakable, so you have to store them.
I'm thinking about, I don't need to be around a shelf full of glass jars. I'm just too clumsy.
Well, there's some pretty good ways of storing them instead of just loose on a shelf. You know, they can actually be placed into some sort of a holding. You mm-hmm. know, those 2-liter bottle things that you mm-hmm. use for Cokes, they could be stood up in something like that. Let's move on. We've also got stainless steel containers, which are excellent for smaller quantities of water, and they are certainly durable. And you'll need to ensure that that container is also food-grade stainless steel to avoid contamination.
And the easy way to do that is to buy a stainless steel water bottle.
Of course.
Very simple. We've advocated having a single wall stainless steel water container because it's versatile. Stainless steel is great.
Oh,
it really
yeah.
is.
It's impervious to a lot of things. Easy to clean, easy to heat up.
Now, let's talk about some best practices when we're looking at storing our water. And this goes across all of the containers that we've talked about. We've talked about really just various sizes is what we've talked about. Barrels, stackable, 5 gallon, 7 gallon, what have you, down to the small water bottle.
Well,
so let's talk about some of the best practices, regardless of the size of the container.
Well, first and foremost, you've got to sanitize these containers. Don't use them brand new without cleaning and washing them first. So clean them, disinfect them before use to prevent any contamination and remove any chemicals or residue that may have been on these containers when they were first labeled or first shipped. You also want to label the containers to include the date of your storage and any other relevant information. For example, is it tap water? Is it spring water? Is it distilled water? Tell me about that water so I have some idea.
Have you pre-treated that water?
Yeah,
we're going
exactly.
to talk about that in just a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And then rotate that water. I told you that our son-in-law rotates his big blue drums on an annual basis. We go about 2 years with ours. You do what you feel comfortable and safe with.
Sure.
But you do want to refresh that stored water every now and then to maintain that quality. Now, the water doesn't actually go bad, but it does become a bit stale, and you can rejuvenate that water from the stale taste by shaking it and re-aerating it, if that makes sense.
Sure.
You're getting oxygen back into it. But it can also become contaminated. So that's one of the reasons we want to do that. And then store it in a cool, dark place. Keep it away from direct sunlight and extreme temperatures. And that will help prevent the bacterial growth and material degradation
And the growth of algae.
And the growth of algae.
Which, as algae's not dangerous, but I don't want to drink it.
No, and there's some things that we can do. And we're going to talk about adding some bleach to our water.
Yeah.
Some folks add it. Some folks don't. Some folks say, well, it's already city water. It has chlorine in it. I'm not going to add more. Some of us say, well, it's the South. If a little bit's good, a little bit more is better.
So, well, you want to check out your bleach concentration. So ensure that the bleach that you're using is not scented or what's known as a color-safe type of bleach, and that it contains 5.25% to 6% sodium hypochlorite. That's the necessary agent that's needed for the sanitation of the water. And so you want to calculate the amount of bleach that you need. It's approximately 8 drops of bleach per gallon of water for clear water. Or if you've got cloudy water, you're going to need to put in about 16 drops per gallon.
Yeah, now we put that in case you're filling your canteen or you're actually filling out of a creek somewhere. But if you're filling up a storage container to store your water, you're going to be using tap water or well water. You're going to be using clean water. So we use that clear water formula of 8 drops per gallon. Now for 55 gallons, that comes out to 440 drops.
Right. So let's convert those drops to either teaspoons or milliliters.
Well, there's 20 drops in 1 milliliter.
Okay.
440 drops becomes 20 drops per milliliter is 22 milliliters.
Okay. So 1 teaspoon is approximately 5 milliliters. So for 55 gallons of water, you need about 4.5 teaspoons of bleach in that container.
Yep. And that formula is in the show notes. Now, when it comes to mixing that bleach, Everything says mix the bleach and stir it well. Well, I think you put some water in your container, then you put your bleach in there, and then you top it off with the rest of the water. And that gives you a good mix of the bleach and the water. Or you can put it in first. It just ensures good mixing of the bleach, and that's all we're really after there.
And if you're using bleach to purify water for immediate use, using that 8 drops per gallon for clear water or 16 drops per gallon for cloudy water, you're going to want to let it stand for at least 30 minutes before using it. And most sites will tell you that an hour or more is actually better, because you have to give that bleach time to activate and to have an effect on any contaminants that are in that water. It's not instantaneous. It's a time-released type of purification. So at least a half an hour and more if you can stand it. In fact, if you know you're going to need to use a lot of water like the next day, just do it overnight and just give it overnight to effect, and then it should be better.
Something we don't have to let stand is coffee.
Oh, that's for sure. And today's cup of coffee comes from Sherry.
Sherry, we really do appreciate
it. We sure do. And if you receive value from the podcast, how about helping us by giving back a little? First, you could buy us a cup of coffee like Sherry did. And second, you can start your Amazon shopping from our website like Elijah did. It costs you nothing extra, but it does pay us a small commission on some qualifying purchases. And you'll find links to both of those at practicalprepping.info. They help us out. We really appreciate it. And that helps us keep the podcast coming to you.
And as Krista always says,
stuff happens. Stay prepared.
And we'll see you next time.